Hey, it's Arrow inside the LAProductions.us studio, unplugged and totally uncut with Brendan Reichs. Man, congratulations on the brand new book. That's got to feel pretty darn cool.
It is pretty cool. You know, this has been a fun series to write. I've been living with the story for about 4 years, and it's just, you know, it's exciting to sort of get it finished while at the same time kind of sad to say goodbye to the characters.
You know, that you bring up a couple of good points there, especially when you say that you spent 4 years on it. The average reader does not understand how the process of a book really has to grow inside the writer. How do you deal with that when you have something as exciting as this project?
I mean, you know, it starts with like a basic kernel of an idea, and then you just kind of keep adding like layer after layer on top of it. And by the end of it, it often doesn't end up being what you started with at all. You know, the original idea for this series when I wrote Nemesis was actually, I was watching the movie Highlander, and I got this idea like, man, that'd be pretty cool if people were sort of in this deathless environment where, you know, nothing counted. And then I sort of grabbed onto that kernel and kept sort of picking at it. It ended up being something completely different, but sort of that's where inspiration can take you. You know, I took this bad 80s movie, which is, by the way, tremendous. Everyone should watch it. But it ended up being, you know, this wild idea on like, what if you were dying, but it just sort of didn't take, you know, it wasn't repeated, wasn't a Groundhog Day kind of thing. It just simply like didn't happen.
The book we're talking about is Chrysalis. It's the latest one. And when you are with a group of characters like this for 4 years, do you ever sit back and watch even movies like A Beautiful Mind with Russell Crowe and still carry those characters with you? It's almost like, you know, they're part of your life no matter what.
Yeah, it definitely is. You know, actually, funny thing happened on this third book on Chrysalis is I got a note from my editor, you know, and she said, hey, this is a great draft when I first turned it in. I'm really liking what you're doing. But have you noticed that you seem to have suddenly really like your antagonists way more than your protagonists?
Oh, no.
And I was like, what are you talking about? She's like, well, you sort of flipped this around and you clearly like Sarah, one of my characters. She's sort of always been like at crossroads with my main character, Min. She's like, you kind of give her all the great lines in this and she comes up with a lot of good ideas. And she's like, you know, I think you've started to like your bad guys more than your good guys. And I was like, oh, God, you're right. You know, so it's funny like how the relationship could evolve because Sarah's like, she's so mean and like brutal but competent. I was like, I love her because she's awful, you know. And I was like, I just found I started to like to write her more, so I had to course correct and make sure I was giving my, you know, my heroes their due in this last draft.
In that last draft and book, which is called Chrysalis, you have to bring some teamwork together on this one. Was that tough to do? Because I mean, you've had a little bit of separation there in past books.
Yeah, it was, you know, sort of these guys have been all over the map. Like, that's one of the things I like to do with my characters. You know, I like to start them in one place where you think, okay, I've got some bad guys, I've got some good guys, and they're going to clash. But I always like by the end of most books to have mixed those bags up where some of the good guys turn out to not be so good and some of the bad guys turn out to be, you know, pretty useful. And Chrysalis, they kind of all end up on the same side for a while, which was really interesting to do because I've had people sort of set at loggerheads all through the series, and suddenly they have a common goal and it's, you know, they have to work together, which was great tension for writing, you know, dialogue and scenes like that. It's nice to sort of push people together that weren't previously and then see what you can do with these new combinations.
So when you put all this action together and, you know, you really take yourself to the edge because it's coming from your fingertips first, you ever reach over there and take your blood pressure to see how it's really affecting you?
Yeah, you know, there's been scenes that have been tough to write. Like in the first book in the series, Nemesis, I do a lot of flashbacks where my main character, sort of the thing that she's dealing with is bizarre in that every 2 years on her birthday, this same guy in a black suit hunts her down and murders her, except for she doesn't die. Instead, she wakes up in a field a mile away without a scratch on her. So I'm sort of trying to deal with this. And I had to write these flashback sequences where I wanted to share those experiences firsthand. But some of these were pretty, you know, pretty grim. It's about, you know, sort of like a man in a black suit hunting down a child at age 8, 10, 12. A couple of them after I wrote, I was like, man, that was rough. You know, I need a little bit of a break. But, you know, I felt like added like necessary like emotion to the book. But yeah, I mean, there can be things you write where something you carry with you for a little bit.
So speaking of those flashbacks, when you do that within your pages, do you have to go back to the original books and say, OK, I know how I did it now? Because, you know, even as a writer, we can bend a story in a heartbeat.
Oh, every single time. And here's the thing that's crazy. I don't think people understand. You know, the book that you wrote comes out a year later. Yep. And you've probably actually already written the next book when you're in a series, when you're out promoting it. So one of the things I struggle with is, one, when I'm on the road, don't give anything away from the second book that isn't out in the book that you're actually promoting. You know, so when I actually was promoting Nemesis, I'd written Genesis and I didn't want to give anything away because I couldn't really talk about the second book until you read the first book. But there are, like, you know, you get these plot points where you don't remember. You know, I had to go back and read, I'm writing a middle grade series called The Dark Deep, and we just finished wrapping up the sequel called The Beast, and I realized I was reading through the first one with my son, and I had things wrong in my own book, and I had to go back and be like, oh, you know, you really have to pay attention to the little details, because you'll make a tweak or two and copy edit and forget it, and then nothing is more embarrassing when you get something wrong in your own book.
The book we're talking about is Chrysalis. So how do you keep from your readers from being spoiler alerters? Because in a book like this, you know, people are going to start talking about that ending immediately.
It's rough. And that's actually, I mean, one of the biggest problems with the Project Nemesis series, of which Chrysalis is the conclusion, is that going out on the road to sell Genesis last year and now Chrysalis now, people are like, what's the book about? And I'm like, oh, I can't tell you anything about that. And, you know, that's tough, because they're like, well, what do you mean? I was like, well, I can tell you what Nemesis is about, and it's a giant conspiracy, and it just gets wilder and wilder. But, like, you know, it's really hard to keep spoilers out of the pitch. And then online, you know, I generally don't go onto reader sites like Goodreads, because that's really more for readers talking to readers. And
right.
As authors, you know, we read 10 great reviews and then one bad one, and all we remember is the bad one. So you tend to stay out of those forums. But, you know, I think people have become very aware of spoiler culture. I think it's sort of ingrained now, where people don't just shoot plot points out like they may have done 5 or 6 years ago.
So
stay with you.
How did you deal with that moment when before the publications actually started beginning, where people would find, they would come up to you and go, wow, so you're a writer. What do you write? You tell them, and they go, yeah. How'd you move through storms like that, where people didn't instantly fall in love with your ideas?
You know, it's like you just sort of have to trust that you have a good story. Like they always say, like, what should you write next? It's like, well, the story that's burning a hole through you that you feel like you have to get out.
Right.
And, you know, I've also, you know, you deal a little with some of those attitudes when you write young adult fiction. You know, I write young adult novels, I write middle grade novels, and sometimes people are like, oh, yeah, so you like kids stuff. And I'm like, well, it's stuff for kids, but they're like, so is it like really basic? Could an adult read it? And then you have to sort of explain, like, well, yeah, 50% of my readers are adults. You know, we just use younger characters. And so you get used to that kind of thing. It's just sort of, you have to believe what you're doing is good enough to see it through. Cause you know, writers, we're racked with self-doubt. That's basically 50% of our character. So you got to get over it.
Well, you're absolutely right. That's like the stuff that I produce for radio. You know, it always kills me when people come up and say, man, that's good. And my only way to get them to back off is I go, I know. And they go, well, that's kind of conceited. Well, no, that means someone's going to give me a bad review next. So don't tell me that it's good. I don't need to have a good, I have to have a bad, to equal it out. Do you go through the same thing?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes it's sort of like, if you're not telling yourself it's good, nobody else will.
Right.
Like you need to believe that, because you know, you write a book, it's one project. It lasts a year. And at the end of it, you have to believe you're getting to a place where it's going to work out. And, you know, you write a first draft, they're always terrible. And you just have to give yourself permission to know, like, hey, this draft is bad, but my idea is good. I'm going to fix it. I'm going to revise this and make it good. I just have to stick with it, because, you know, I put out one product, maybe two, a year, and that's my whole year. So if I get shaky on it, I'd never get anything done.
When you have to say so long to these characters in Chrysalis, do you have a personal funeral for them? Because you know they're gone. You're gonna have to mourn the loss.
Well, in this series, I have murdered each of these characters maybe 6 to 7, sometimes 20 times. So I've sort of been playing around with whether they're living or not living or dead, or what form they're taking from the whole beginning. But yeah, it was rough. You know, I had a two-way go at the end of the series, and I wrote two different endings. And then one of them felt very, very right, and the other one felt wrong. And so I went with that. But it was interesting. They were very different moods. So I had to decide, like, where am I going to leave these people, and what sort of situation should they be in? So it was rough, you know. Now it's going to take a little time. I got to get some distance from them. You know, I've been writing 64 kids, the same 64 for,
wow,
like I said, 4 years. So it's time to write something new, but I'll miss them. There's some fun ones in there.
We're both in Charlotte. We're both writers. My favorite place to write is the big hidden rocks over here by the Stonecrest. Where's your favorite place to write in town?
Oh, that's an interesting one. I'll have to check that out. You should never give away your good writing holes. But, you know, I have sort of two different modes. When I'm writing new stuff, when I'm writing like original copy, my draft zero, I have to do it at home,
yep,
sort of in completely controlled environment with no sound. I can edit and revise, which is probably 3 times as much of the time in the process. I could do that pretty much anywhere. Because I can sort of cut that up a little bit more, where I don't need like holistic blocks. But I generally do most of my writing at home. I'm not sort of a coffee shop person. I'm a native Charlottean, so we're used to space. You know, a lot of my New Yorker friends, they're like, oh, I write it inside of cafes surrounded by people.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, we have space down here. We don't have to do that. So I usually write at home, but you know, I'm prepared to work anywhere. I travel a lot promoting and doing festivals. I'm on the board of 2 Y'all Fest and Y'all West literary festivals. And so I have to be out on the road a lot. And so you got to work where you can.
So was it worth giving up the law, the you know, you being an attorney and all that kind of stuff for all of this stuff?
Oh, yes, it was. Yeah. You know, I didn't hate being an attorney. There was parts of it I liked. I was a litigator, so I got to be in court a good bit, and that was fun. But it just very quickly was obvious it was not a good personality fit for me. Right. People are very serious about the law. They expect you to be very serious. And I'm sort of, hey, look at this guy with the shirt kind of type, you know? So it's just, it just wasn't a good personality fit. I felt like I could do the job, but I couldn't play the role of being an attorney. And, you know, I think my bosses might agree with me on that point. So I miss sort of the intellectual challenge, but I don't miss the hours or the time spent in my little office staring at a screen and going over documents. Don't miss that at all.
I can totally agree with you, because I'm sitting here. The studio overlooks a forest here in South Charlotte, and I've got six deer that are walking through the forest right now. Dude, I'm not going back to corporate America. It's just not going to happen.
That's the one thing I decided sort of when I left the law, and I sort of made a go at this, and it's been working out. You know, I've got 11 books under my belt, and I feel like I can keep doing this as a career. But yeah, if it wasn't, I'm not going back.
Well, there's always a Phillips Place over there, you know, at Regal. You can just go get a movie job.
Exactly. At this point, that sounds like good to me. You know, like I'll be a camp counselor. I just got to stay away from the office.
What's the best place for someone to find more information about your books about, you know, because you said you got 11 books out there.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, I have my own website. It's just www.brendanreichs.com. And it's got all my books listed there. There's links to my appearances and stuff. I'll be out on the road doing a national tour starting May 5th for when Chrysalis is released. So if you get release dates there. And I'm on the Twitter machine and on the Instagram and all that stuff. Everything's just my name. I'm lucky. I'm one of those lucky people whose full name is a unique spelling that no one else has. So you can always find me with just by sort of typing in my name.
Well, when you do appearances here in Charlotte, are you at the Barnes & Noble at the Arboretum, or do you go over there to Park Road Shopping Center?
I do both. This time on March 4th, I will actually be doing, it will be at the Barnes & Noble Arboretum. I'll be doing my launch party March 4th for Chrysalis there. I'm a big fan of Park Row Books. I try and sort of bounce back and forth. You know, I mean, it is very important that we support independent bookstores, but I think people also overlook that it is important that, you know, we protect Barnes & Noble from predation by the other large industries so that we can have a nice big box chain as well. So I try and support both as best I can.
Oh, the Barnes & Noble Arboretum is my hangout. I'll go in there. That's right. I buy all my journals and stuff for my daily writing, and they'll sit there, they'll kind of look at it, and they'll go, is this all you need? And I go, you have no idea what's going on those pages, buddy. Don't ask me if this is all I need.
I do like that location a lot. I've done several events there. Like I said, I'm doing one on March 4th, and I also actually do on March 8th, I'm doing an event at Main Street Books up in Davidson. So there'll be actually two in the Charlotte area on this
tour. Oh, really?
Okay. I've never been up there before, so I'm pretty excited about it.
Oh, man, that's those Lake Norman people. They'll be crowding around you, buddy.
Should be fun.
You get a couple of NASCAR drivers in there. They write books, huh?
Yeah, I know. I tell you what, man. There's so many there up the lake. I should write a book featuring one of them. Maybe I can get some cross promotion.
Yeah, there you go. Please come back to the show anytime in the future. The door is always going to be open for you, dude.
Oh, that sounds fantastic, man. That was a great time. Anytime.